From the studios of Teeing It Up in the swamps of Jersey, this is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling for Tuesday, April 16th. And for us golf fans who just witnessed a historic Masters and happen to be Nick fans, we now go into playoff mode. So we go from a high and stay on that high as the NBA playoffs begin tonight with the play-in tournament and then the playoffs themselves over the weekend. And to analyze all of this, we welcome in Jordan Brickman. Hello, Jordan. How are you?
Hey, Jeremy. Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Off the top, you posted on IG last night a new food item from Citi Field, I believe?
The egg roll rainbow cookie. Yes, I did.
What are your thoughts?
It's not as bad as you would think it is. I think it's worth trying.
Okay.
I think a lot of times you'll get food at Citi Field and it's not the freshest. I actually was kind of like fresh and warm, but I definitely didn't want to eat the whole thing. It's good to have one or two bites and share it with other people.
Good to know for any folks that are at the Citi Field this summer, whether they are Met fans or on a board, a ballpark tour. All right, so before we get into the playoffs, let's talk about this Knicks season. I went back to the season preview podcast we did, sir. Mm-hmm. Definitely will hit the over, 44.5. Slow start with a tough schedule. No big trade during the season. And they lose in the second round to a title contender with that being either the Celtics or the Bucks. Well, they damn sure hit the over at 50. Hit the over with 50. I think the schedule was in kind of spurts, and then the OG trade, you got that one wrong, just blew this thing up, and then his injuries slowed them down, and then now we walk into the unknown with no Randall for the playoffs. But it's a very fascinating. I never thought we would be the two seed. Never in my wildest dreams did I at least think two seed.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you were to tell me Randall goes out end of January, there's no way you would consider that they'd make the two seed at that point.
Yeah.
And not only if you told me Randall's going to be out the rest of the season after I think it was June 29th or so that Miami game. And OG is going to be out for however long he was out, you know, more than a month, maybe closer to 6 weeks. There's no way I would have said they made the two seed, which is why you're seeing some Brunson for MVP hype, and definitely all NBA first team hype around him, because that's tremendous what he's done.
We can talk about it this season, this summer, but him not being named one of the guys for the U.S. Olympic roster, not right. But anyway, that's a whole separate podcast, whole separate thing about them trying to win gold medal in Paris this summer. The other thing is they went through that whole stretch with no Mitchell Robinson. And then he comes back and Mitch is slowly looking like himself.
Yeah, he's been better. I like him off the bench and being able to use him and Hartenstein. Have similar skill sets, but do off defensively at least, but do some different things. Well, obviously Mitch's offensive rebounding being a huge key to the offense, and that's going to be valuable once he's playing his backup centers come playoff time and be able to use their fouls and depending on the matchup, whether it's a guy like Embiid or Bam or Giannis, that he'd use their fouls against. There's not a lot of drop off between the two of them. So it'll be interesting how those rotations develop across the playoffs. If one of them really separates themselves from the other and how much they can play. Can Hartenstein play 35 minutes a night? Can Mitch do that if they need him to, if he's playing well enough to do so? He's starting to get back. I still don't think he's totally normal. I still think he drops some passes, isn't getting his hands on rebounds the same way that he used to, but I trust that by the time the playoffs are in full swing, he'll continue to look like himself.
And as we record this on Tuesday, Tom Thibodeau said that he is fine after missing the second half, not being available for the second half on Sunday, so that's a good sign. Big picture for this Knicks team. You got Brunson doing ridiculous things. You've got gritty guys like whether it's DiVincenzo or Hart or iHeart, who just are classic Tibbs guys. Deuce has obviously improved way more than I thought Deuce would ever improve as the season's gone on. Big picture on this team entering the playoffs, where's your head at?
I'm very excited. I feel confident. I'll feel confident against every team other than the Celtics and the East. Feel like they will have a shot to beat all of them. You know, the Bucks being the other team that had like title aspirations this year, in the East, that, you know, Giannis is limping, essentially going into the playoffs. He's going to probably miss some games. They hope to have him by the end of the first round. That can they even win some games against the Pacers with him injured that way? So I feel confident that they can win against all of these teams in the East. I also feel like they could lose to all of them. None of them are, you know, true, unless like the Bulls or the Hawks sneak in somehow. None of them are truly, awful teams. They're all dangerous. They all do things well. They all do things that will give us trouble. So, you know, I'm confident they're gonna win a round or maybe even two. But it also would not be shocking for them to lose a knock 'em out, drag out series in the first round to one of these teams that are starting to peak now.
And for me, that's the Randall factor. That's not having Randall, because you can blitz Brunson all day without Randall, and that's the question. And that for me is the big X factor for any of these teams. Can, whether it's OG, whether it's Precious, whether it's Deuce, whether it's Hart, can somebody take the pressure off of Brunson when he gets blitzed time after time after time after time, which I think is coming in these playoffs?
Yeah, I think it's coming. I think you're going to see teams do various things around him. I mean, I think Dante is going to have a big workload. Like, if Dante's hitting his 3-point shot, it opens up the offense in a notable way. Obviously, he can create a bit on the move and off the dribble to an extent. But if he's hitting, you know, on his 11 threes attempted per game, if he's hitting that at 40%, that's going to make it really hard to double Brunson, as well as if OG and Bogdanovich are hitting their jumpers. The big thing is if those are falling. Because if those are not falling, it's going to be really difficult for Brunson to do much. I think back to that Lakers game the Knicks played a few months back. OG and Randall were both out, but they were essentially triple-teaming him. And that's when he's really got to have to pass and rely on his teammates, and if his teammates aren't hitting their shots, then it's going to be troublesome. Blitzing him, I'm not too worried about. He deals with that all the time. But it's when the whole defense is basically trying to stop him. Will he be able to get his teammates to make the plays that they need to? The other thing that the Knicks have been doing that I think is interesting, and we'll see if that maintains over the postseason here, is Brunson doesn't bring the ball up all the time. Sometimes it's Hart or Dante or whoever makes sense based off who's on the floor, brings the ball up. And the logic there, I think, is to let Brunson kind of, you know, not have to kill himself, bring the ball across the half-court line and having to deal with the press there. Someone else brings it up, they can just pass it to him once they get across half-court. And it lessens the burden just a little bit on him, because he's going to have a huge burden playing 40-plus easily every night, no question, in the playoffs. So I hope that they can do some things like that so he doesn't get too tired at the end of these games here, because he's had some stretches over at the end of the season here where he's had some tired legs in the fourth quarter. And that's, you know, obviously you want him to be fresh at the end of those games. The Knicks don't have a lot of ball handling behind him. Hart is kind of a one-handed ball handler. Dante's okay. Deuce is okay. They don't have a lot of guys that can bring the ball up if not him and playmake. So, that's going to be something to watch, is if he's bringing the ball up the floor, if I'm on another team, I'm pressing him the whole game and trying to make him work and work and work. So by the time the game is close in the final few minutes, you know, try to tire him out as much as you can. So, it'll be interesting to see if the Knicks can do that and avoid those situations. Because that's my biggest concern, is what's the playmaking, what's the ball handling behind Brunson.
Yeah. Jordan Brickman with us here on Teeing It Up, previewing the Knicks postseason. You wanted a lineup change a while back. I believe it was Bojan Bogdanovic into the first unit, Josh Hart into the second unit, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Do you still want that change done?
I think at this point with OG, I wanted that while OG was out.
Okay.
Because I felt, because Hart and Precious and Hartenstein is three non-shooters, so I felt they had to have at least one more shooter there. And Bogdanovich replacing Hart would have a lot of rebounding issues, so you have to keep Precious out there with him. So with OG now at the four, you have another shooter. Hart obviously is not a volume shooter, but he'll throw up a couple of games. In the playoffs, you'll see them leave him alone more there. I still think it's interesting. I mean, you've seen Deuce's minutes really drop since OG has come back, going from 47 minutes a game to like 18 to 20. So it'll be interesting to see how his role evolves. You know, Hart, those transition layups that he's so known for, those are not going to be as open in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Teams are going to scout that and stop him from doing that. So if he's not getting those transition opportunities, and they're going to box him out better. Like, of course, his effort's going to be higher than most teams and most players, but at the elite level, these guys are going to put a body on him over a 7-game series. So I do think that we could see, I don't think we're going to see triple-double Hart consistently in these playoffs here, and they're going to leave him open. So I think we could see Deuce or Bogdanovich in some of the closing lineups, or at least depending on, you know, matchup and how folks are playing, because they're going to need that shooting out there, and they're going to need to rely on those guys to do so. And with Mitch and Hartenstein and OG adding some size there at the four and some flexibility, I think that we'll see Hart's minutes drop a bit in the postseason there, because I think some of the things he does well bode better in the regular season than the postseason.
Did you see enough from OG since he came back to be confident that he can be the OG we traded for come the playoffs?
I'm not 100% confident that his elbow is going to be not an issue. But his shot sometimes still looks like he's kind of aiming it or favoring it. It's hard to tell if that's just how he always shoots. And even when he came here originally, he had tape on his elbow, so I think his elbow's been bothering him since he's been on the team.
Yeah.
I feel like he's going to have good days and bad days with that jumper. You know, he's had some good games this year. Seems like he's comfortable attacking the rim with some of the dunks he's going for. But that 3-point shot where sometimes it looks like he's kind of aiming it. So I think he'll have some good days and bad days there. So I'm not expecting him to consistently be an offensive weapon, but just his ability to, he can hit that, you know, kind of step back mid-range shot. He's obviously a great cutter. He can, of course, hit the knockdown shot when he's feeling good. Even post-up, depending on the matchup, you know, taking advantage of mismatches, he's willing to do that as well. So he's a more versatile offensive player, even if he doesn't have a big load than some of these other guys in the team. So they're going to need to rely on him to do that, you know, at least for a couple games in each series. But defensively, though, I think defensively I expect him to be 100%.
Jordan Brickman with us here on Teeing It Up. And before we move on to potential opponents, I want to talk about you for a second. You being the fan, this arena, this Garden, this fan base, but especially the Garden this year, and Ben Stiller has talked about this multiple times, has just wanted to explode and has exploded at some games. I really think that this could be an advantage, that this is a fan base that believes they can go far, and that this is a fan base that can really cause some, whether it's communication issues, whether it's, you know, whatever, for some kind of opponent. I know that sounds obvious, but you're in there as a season ticket holder. Am I being hyperbole? Am I being ridiculous? Or is there something to what I'm saying?
I think it comes down to who the player is on the other side. Like, we see Trae Young,
right,
you know, years ago, kind of lean into it and elevate this game. Mm. So I think it depends on who the other team is. I think you see a team like the Cavs last year, who Jared Allen said afterwards, the lights were brighter than we expected. I think you see it impact those teams. If they get a chance to play, let's say the Pacers upset the Bucks and the Knicks are able to win the first round, I could see it being notable for those guys,
right,
the Pacers players. I don't think that Giannis or Dame or Butler or Embiid or these guys are going to be as affected by it as some younger players. So I think it's more of an impact for in the earlier rounds than the later rounds. But I think it's certainly helpful for our players to get that love and that support. So I don't know how much of a difference maker it is, but you know, we'll always take a loud crowd over a quiet one, that's for sure.
Yes, and I will gladly take home court as well in terms of that extra game.
Definitely.
If necessary. All right, so Jordan's traveling, so we're not sure who the next first round opponent could be. It could be the Heat or it could be the Sixers. Sitting here, and again, we're recording this on Tuesday. Rozier's out for the play-in game. Not sure what that means, but he's scary still, even from his Boston days, and he victimized us. Was the last game against the Heat or the one before that?
Yeah.
He went off on us.
Yeah.
So I he still gives me, you know, him. Whoops, dropped my pen. Him plus Butler plus Bam is still a trio that concerns. When I look at the Sixers, it's all, for me, it's all Embiid. And if he's healthy, and is this the true Embiid? He certainly came back from the locker room, you know, a couple days ago and put up numbers. Kyle Lowry has had our number in recent playoffs. So for me, this is almost a wash as to who I would prefer the opponent to be, but more so, I guess, not the Sixers.
I can't decide. I keep going back and forth on it. You know, I was looking at the Jalen Brunson's game log over the last month or two. If you look at, I'll read you this. These are his field goal percentages over the last 12 games. Okay, I'll give you the field goal percentage. 50, 58, 53, 44, 27, 60, 46, 50, 54, 65. The 27 is the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
So there's and if you go up a little bit further, he had a game against the Nets where he shot 29%, but he also shot 27% against the Sixers without Embiid in that game where they had the back-to-back games against Philly, and the Knicks lost the one. So all of his three games where he shot below basically like 46%, two of them were against Philly and Miami. So they're both scary. They both are teams that could. It would not be shocking to see one of those teams in the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, look up this year. So they're both certainly scary teams. I think that there is, even if Embiid is healthy, which I think it's fair to assume he's not 100% healthy considering the Sixers just rested him in an important game on Sunday.
Yeah.
As a way to prepare for the playoffs for him. Even if he's healthy, he's not going to be 100% from a cardio standpoint. You know, I even think back to like Michael Jordan back when he came back with the Bulls from playing baseball, and they have the playoff run there. He was not 100% healthy in the playoffs in terms of his cardio. There's Embiid, who historically has bad cardio in general and historically struggles in the playoffs. There's just no way he's going to be able to be 100% of his abilities over the entirety of a playoff series or of the playoffs in general. So I feel confident that the Knicks can wear on him throughout a series. I feel like, you know, they have a lot of bodies to throw at him. You know, the Knicks had OG guard him at times when they played them this year. Of course, Hartenstein and Mitch, that's a lot of fouls to use on him and to kind of beat him up. And you know, I trust Tibbs to use him in different coverages. Maxey is, of course, scary, but it's going to be the first time carrying this load for himself in the playoff series. He's been in the playoffs before, of course, but not as the second banana to Embiid. So, additionally, by the way, if the Sixers lose tomorrow night, then they're going to have to be playing a back-to-back with Embiid with a chance to make the playoffs.
Oof.
So, are they going to be able to do that? And then if they do that, is Embiid going to be ready for game one 2 days later? So, well, I guess it might be, I don't really know when the game one would be for the number one seed, if they're the eighth seed. But, you know, 1 or 2 days later, can Embiid survive that? So, I think they're going to be going all out for the game against the Heat. I'm expecting them to win that game and face us. That's my prediction, because they can't really afford to have a back-to-back with Embiid, but go have to play back-to-back games like that. So
that game's on Friday. FYI, it's a Friday. So he'll have 1 day rest, hypothetically.
Okay, so he'll have 1 day rest, and then so then game one would be with the number one seed on Sunday then. So he would have one day off in between both.
Oh, you're saying from the play-in final, if they lose, the play-in final, yeah. and then us. No, we are locked in. We are locked into Saturday.
Saturday, yeah. But we're playing the winner of the first play-in game.
Gotcha, okay. No, that's yeah. Sorry. I was thinking both play-in games. That is a fascinating factor about him having to play a back-to-back. Yes, the play-in tournament's a lot of things. It forces you to do these things, which is exactly what you're saying. So, sorry, my bad. There, go ahead. Yeah.
All good. Yeah. So I think they're going to go all out. I mean, either way, they're going to want to limit the load on him, even if it's as much as possible. So I think they're going to go all out to win that game tomorrow against the Heat. So they're scary. Embiid is the best. Could be the best player of all three of those teams if he's healthy. He could be better than Brunson. He could be better than Butler, Bam, Maxey, etc. Certainly very scary, but historically a poor performer in the playoffs, even when he's fully healthy. And I don't trust that he's going to be at his most optimal, despite the numbers he's put up since he's come back. I think that the playoffs will be different, and they'll be able to really drag on him and tire him out in a way that will hurt them come playoff time. So I'm kind of leaning Sixers because of that. The Heat are always going to be playoff tested, battle tested. They're gonna have that game face on. They have Spoelstra. Nick Nurse is a good coach for the Sixers.
Yep.
He has a history. He's obviously won a championship with them. But Spoelstra is a scary, scary coach.
I was about to say that if you didn't. Yep.
Yeah. He's scary. And obviously, Butler wasn't that good against the Knicks last year in the playoffs, but he also had that ankle injury. You don't know how much that affected him. Excuse me. But obviously he can always go nuclear even if OG is guarding him. I trust Spo more to make the Knicks uncomfortable defensively. So we'll see if that's what happens. Of course, it'd be great to kind of exercise that demon a bit of beating the Heat. It'd be nice to get that back from them and eliminate them. But maybe the Heat also just have their number. The Knicks did not look great in most of those games last year against them. They did in Game 5 and Game 6. They were in it, but by the end, they weren't able to pull through. So I'm rooting, I think, to face the Sixers because of the Embiid factor not being 100%. But I agree, it's essentially, a pick-your-poison kind of battle there.
Yes, I put Spo ahead of Nick Nurse just because of the amount of time Spo has been in the spot. Nick Nurse was for a bunch of those teams with the Raptors, but with Spo and Pat Riley, he's just such... I mean, he's a Hall of Fame coach. I think you would agree that Spoelstra someday will be a Hall of Fame coach.
Of course.
Yeah. So for me, that's the X factor there, which then brings us back to the Knicks and Tom Thibodeau, who has had playoff problems. So I asked this question, of fellow Knicks fans, and they it's like they curl up in a ball. Are you scared of Tom Thibodeau in this series?
No, I think Tibbs has had maybe his best year ever coaching. When people say, so the Knicks lost Randall, Mitch, and OG for a long period of time. Randall throughout the end of the season, coming into January. They had a huge trade midseason, and Brunson is, arguably an MVP candidate, but some people don't have him even in their top five. But the Knicks still got the 2 seed and won 50 games. And if Brunson's not getting the credit, then Tibbs has to.
Yeah.
So Tibbs has adjusted the team's offense. He's obviously he plays some guys a lot of minutes, but that's only over stretches. If you look at the average minutes per game, the Knicks players are in line with a lot of the other players in the league across the whole season. He's done a tremendous job this year. I trust that he's grown in his time here with the Knicks and in general as a coach. So we've had things nitpick with him, every year in the playoffs, and I'm sure there will be that this year. But I trust him to do the best that he can with this roster out there. The biggest thing is that minutes, and I think Precious should probably be out of the rotation unless there's specific matchups that Tibbs likes for him to be in. We're going to see that rotation shrink a bit. I think we could maybe see Deuce's minutes shrink too much. Is a bit of a concern for me. I'd like to see him still play and get and be involved because he was playing so incredible recently. He's been an incredible defender against point of attack players. So I'd like to see him still be out there for long stretches of time. But I have gotten to a place now where I really trust him, especially come playoff time, to make the proper adjustments. The guy's a heck of a coach.
I will add one more thing onto that, and I'm with you totally. Dante's won a title. DiVincenzo comes in here knowing what it takes to get to June. We Knicks fans want to get like through May and like into mid-May with this team, right? It's like so often we're like, just get us to the Memorial Day, please. Get us basketball on the Memorial Day. Dante's been there to June, and I think that could be a very good intangible as well with this team going forward.
Yeah, I mean, OG obviously as well.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But, you know, neither of those guys were on in the rotation. I mean, OG was hurt. Dante, I'm looking now. Dante only played 3 games in that postseason for the Bucks. I think he was out come championship time. But he was on the roster, and he saw what it took. And he played 13 games with the Warriors. That's last year in the postseason. So he, you know, he's had... you know, some playoff experience there. He's played 26 games in his career in the postseason, but the role and burden he has on him now is very different than those teams. He's expected, there's pressure on him to perform.
Yeah.
If he does not shoot well, the Knicks will struggle. Like, they are relying on him to be a scorer and to hit that jump shot. So if he starts struggling, there's pressure on him to do so. I think with those other teams he had, you know, he was in the rotation while he was in it, but it was, you know, 20 minutes a night, less than that. You know, like with the Warriors last year, he averaged 18 minutes a game. So, you know, that's like more Juice McBride minutes or Bogdanovich minutes in terms of the rotation there. So he's going to be expected to take 10 to 15 shots a game and hit a decent percentage of those three-pointers in particular. So it's a different animal for him. And, you know, again, OG was also has a ring, but wasn't playing there. So they've seen it firsthand, but they weren't a part of it. So it'll be interesting to see if they can step up in the way that their teammates were at those times.
And think about this too. There was a Dante game recently, I forget what it was, where he was like 2 for 9 to start the game. Like that stuff just can't happen in the playoffs. It might happen for one game. You can survive it if other guys step up and if Brunson keeps doing what Brunson does. But Dante can't be consistently 2 for 9 or whatever he was in that one game recently. So that's my thoughts there. Any broad NBA playoff thoughts that do not involve the Knicks? I have one, and that is that the Boston Celtics are going to not only make the NBA Finals, but win the NBA Finals if they stay healthy. They are far and away better than anybody, period.
I think that my take is that Celtics don't win the championship. the Nuggets have destroyed them in the games matchups this year. I think that Drew Holiday has taken a step back defensively. He's not as impactful as he once was. I think that contract that they just signed him to is going to be interesting in terms of how he ages and how that hampers them potentially long term. I agree that they win the East. I think that they might be able to kind of cakewalk it through. The Knicks maybe being able to give them a battle, but, you know, tough games, but Celtics, you know, coming through at the end of those, you know, more often than the Knicks do just because of their talent level. I do think the Celtics, my biggest concern with the Celtics, I think I might have said this in the preseason pod, is that they don't have a lot of, their biggest weakness is size, and they don't have a lot of depth behind the size that they do have, and those guys are either old or injury prone or both. KP and Horford are generally injury prone. Can KP survive a full playoff series? Horford's in his late 30s now. Can he survive or hold up just in terms of his quality of play for a full playoff series? So it'll be interesting to see if that can happen, because you start losing one or two of those guys, there's some big holes on that team now. And they're still very 3-point dependent. They still settle for jump shots. They still don't drive as much as they could. They still don't have that great playmaking point guard on the team. So those are still holes there. Now they're still they're probably the most talented team, top to bottom. But are they going to be able to maintain that against the elite of the elite? Now they might not play an elite team till finals, but can they do that at that championship level? And I'm still picking the Nuggets to win the West. So I think the Nuggets repeat by beating the Celtics.
Interesting. That'll be interesting, because the playoffs are where you get exposed, and that could be an interesting scenario if Boston gets exposed for not only the size and the depth, and you did say that on a previous podcast, so good callback for you there. That is definitely a worry if I was a Celtic fan. But the focus is on the Knicks. The focus is on getting off to a good start and winning. It's hard to know, obviously, without an opponent, but I'll ask it this way. Your prediction, Jordan Brickman, how far do the Knicks go in the playoffs?
Knicks lose in 6 to the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that's like the most optimistic take that you could have right now. It's something along those lines, is that they're able to beat one of these teams, the Heat or the Sixers, that have championship aspirations this year. And then I would assume they're probably going to play the Bucks the next round, and, you know, potentially a hobbled Bucks, and a Damian Lillard who's starting to decline as well and hasn't been the same guy and is apparently unhappy in Milwaukee, and able to battle their way through that as well. And then, you know, they kind of tough their way to winning a game or two from Boston. 6 is pretty optimistic, I would say, in that series, maybe even 5, but losing in the Eastern Conference Finals would be a tremendous, tremendous season for the Knicks, especially with Randle being out. So that's my glass half full take. Glass half empty take is they lose in the first round in 7, but we're gonna hope for that Eastern Conference Finals run.
I'm gonna take that glass half empty take that glass and move it off the table. We are definitely winning in round one. My concern is that somebody does surprise us, and if it's the Bucks, it's that Giannis just somehow is himself. I don't see how you can after that fall. That looks like a horrible, horrible fall. You know, so many people have mentioned Kevin Durant, and what happened to Kevin Durant was that 19, 18, 17? I forget what year that was. When he tore his Achilles shortly after that. So I don't know how slow or fast you're going to be with Giannis. I think if the Knicks win the first round, and if Giannis is a non-factor, they make the finals. I think if he is a factor, we come up just heartbreakingly short. Because that's what happens to the Knicks, unfortunately. Wait, I just went glass half empty after kicking down your glass half empty take. What am I doing?
Well, winning the first round, look, it's not a guarantee.
That's true, true.
You know, so that's still valuable. And losing to the Bucks would not be, I mean, depending on how it looks, of course, we can revisit this take. But on the surface, losing to a healthy Bucks team is nothing to be ashamed of when you're missing your second best player.
Absolutely. Jordan, I just love the fact that we're doing these pods. This is a good first step. We're in the playoffs.
Yeah, and it seems like, look, they're built for longevity. Like,
yes.
Hey, we should be here again next year and the next few years. So I think there's a lot of room to improve. They have all the draft picks and more. They have great contracts. You know, so OG's going to probably get paid a lot this year, this offseason, and maybe Brunson gets an extension, but they still have great contracts with descending value, young guys, movable guys. They're in a really great spot as a franchise.
I think the other thing, too, is these guys like each other. What was that quote Brunson had at the end of one of these games recently? The key to our chemistry is that we hate each other, but deep down kind of like each other. Whatever it was.
It's like him and Hart's relationship.
Yes, yes, yes. And that, I think, I think people overlook the chemistry of this group, and it's not just Brunson Hart and DiVincenzo. This entire group likes each other, genuinely likes each other. And I think that's a big factor here, too, as well.
Yeah, exactly. Jordan, I clearly agree.
Yeah. Jordan Brickman, thank you, as always, for coming on Teeing It Up.
Thank you, Jeremy. Let's go, Knicks.
Let's go, Knicks, indeed. And thank you for listening to this edition of Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling.